This podcast was recorded on the date indicated with the link. The views and opinions expressed herein are as of the date recorded and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities. Such views and opinions may differ from those of DoubleLine Capital or its affiliates and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide updates or changes. Welcome to Monday Morning Minutes, hosted by DoubleLine's fixed income asset allocation strategists and portfolio managers, Samuel Lau and Jeffrey Mayberry. Please direct any comments and suggestions to minutes@doubleline.com or see us on Twitter at DLineMinutes.
Welcome to this week's episode of DoubleLine Monday Morning Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry back with Sam Lau.
Hey, hey.
We're recording just after the close. Those of you listening live on the Twitter spaces know that it's just after the close, Friday, February 10th. Jason, our Twitter guy, put out a Twitter poll. And unsurprisingly, the people that use Twitter and respond to Twitter polls want us to continue using Twitter. So I guess we'll keep at it for now. Sam, a big Super Bowl game on Sunday. Eagles versus the Chiefs, but I really want to get your thoughts on the coin toss. What do you think, heads or tails?
Yeah, I don't even know. I'll say heads, but I'm less interested in who's actually playing in the game, as these things tend to be a little bit boring, although for last year's was pretty exciting. But I am excited to watch Rihanna perform, so that's where my team alliance allegiance lies.
It just shows your age, because, you know, say the past 10 years or so, they've been pretty good Super Bowls. But as we were growing up, the Super Bowls were, notoriously terrible.
Yeah, so maybe I'll tune in. Maybe I won't. We'll see. It'll be a coin toss on that one. So,
well, at least, it's an excuse to get together and eat some good food.
Yeah.
I know you're always down for that.
Get a little bit of junk food going. So, yeah, that's right.
All right. Why don't you kick us off on the where are we for this week?
Yeah, looking across the board in markets, it's a pretty rough week for risk assets and bonds alike here. I'm not sure what happened while I was gone there, but I know that Jay Powell spoke last Wednesday on the back of the FOMC meeting, and then we had some unexpected surprises on the upside for Pizza Friday, aka the jobs data. So, perhaps the markets are still trying to continue to digest that information along with the renewal of Fed talking head speak this week. But looking at the S&P 500 on the week-to-date basis, that is down 1.1%. The downside led by the comm services, which is down 5.5% on the week-to-date. Flip side of that was energy, was up nearly 5% at a positive 4.89%. Everything else outside of energy, the rest of the 10 gig sectors there, were all in the red for the week-to-date. Moving over to, yields here. Wow, it's one of those things where, I was gone for just, let's call it 13 days. And, oftentimes we joke about it. It's like when you come back from a hiatus for that long, it doesn't seem like anything changed. But looking here at the yield curve, which I don't know what you did, but the two-year Treasury note yield now is at 4.52%, up 23 basis points on the week in the yield. The 10-year yield is at 3.74%, up 22 basis points on the yield, and the bonds at 3.82, also up about 20 basis points or so on that yield.
If you listened to Eric and I last week, you would have known about the Pizza Friday, about the FOMC meeting, and about the market moves on mostly on that day on Friday. And as Jeff Sherman pointed out earlier this week on his webcast, did get that ISM services number that bounced back. So, it was back above 50, I think 55 or so. So it was that one day just had a big move. So, you can listen to us even when you're gone.
Yeah. No, it was actually a good way for me to kind of stay in tune with the market. So I did catch up on that. And I won't run you on anything that Jay Powell might have said this week. His face did turn red after the Thursday after the after the presser, but we'll leave it at that for now until the macro section. But in terms of what the moves in the Treasury yield curve meant for the overall bond market, the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate is down 1.4% on the week-to-date basis, pretty much right across the board for the various sectors of the fixed income market that we cover. Perhaps the one exception here is bank loans, which looks to be exactly flat versus the week prior. Leading the way down within the constituents of the ag was the IG corporate credit market, down about 2.5 points on the week, followed by agency mortgage-backed securities, down about 1.5, and U.S. Treasuries down about 1.25. Outpacing the IG corporate credit space, though, here in the U.S. for the worst performer was EM sovereign debt, which was down 2.8%. So pretty much a bloodbath in fixed income land this week on the back of some of the moves that we saw here reflected in the Treasury yield curve.
Yeah, and I guess if you did take no interest rate risk in your floating rate and bank loan sector, you were flat. So, I guess you had that going for you.
Yeah,
just earn that carry.
Who would have thought that the bank loan sector would be the safe haven asset in a week like this, right? But it's the credit side did not impact it nearly as much, but the floating rate aspect did help shelter against some of that pain there. Moving over to the commodity side of things, the Bloomberg commodity broad basket there was up 1.6% on the week, still down in negative land for the year to date, down 3% for the year to date basis. Looking at gold was exactly flat over last week, ending the week at just shy of $1,863 a troy ounce there. WTI crude oil, the front month future, was up pretty sharply, as we were talking about a little bit earlier today, tongue in cheek. We said thanks, Russia, for some of the announcements that they put out overnight here, saying that they're planning they're expected to cut production by about half million barrels per day there. So with that, WTI crude oil for the week, it popped up 8.75%, sorry. To end the week just shy of $80 a barrel per WTI crude oil. Moving down to the final, asset on our scoreboard here is Bitcoin as a proxy for digital assets there. That's down 7%, closing the week at 21,700 of Bitcoin. So with that wrap up, Jeff, do you want to take us through what happened in the macro front this past week?
Yeah, it was a very quiet week this week, as we highlighted last week. Just to get to the data side of things, jobless claims data, both initial jobless claims and continuing claims, came out yesterday, both slightly higher than expectations, but still very, very low numbers. And the moving averages of these numbers, because they do tend to be volatile, moving averages are continuing to fall. Then this morning we did get one of Jay Powell's supposed data points that he likes to look at, the University of Michigan 5 to 10 year inflation expectations. That number came in as expected, flat at 2.9%. It is funny that the 1 year number, just given gasoline prices more have risen recently, the 1 year inflation expectations is a little bit higher. As Mark Kimbrough put in our synopsis, that folks like to extrapolate the present experience into the future. And I think that's why, Sam, that's why you and I, when we look at the survey data, really why we kind of discount a lot of it, especially the kind of short-term 1 year inflation expectations. If we get on to the more important and exciting parts of the macro calendar that we had this weekend, it was the Fed speak. We did have Jay Powell in his highly anticipated meeting or sit down on Tuesday, and it was a very relaxed kind of interview. It wasn't used to just seeing him stand up at the podium and the reporters are like, thank you for answering my question, and then ask him a question and he answers. Here they were making jokes back and forth. One of the questions was how much does the Fed chair make, and Powell said he thinks it was about 190,000. And then, since that is public information, it is the Fed chair does make $203,500 per year. Given the amount of stress that job entails, it does seem like a worthwhile type salary there. Also, on a more important note, he did say, Jay Powell did say that active sales of mortgage-backed securities is not on the active list of things being considered. So they're not thinking about actively selling MBS yet. He did also kind of say that as we've highlighted in the past, Sam, sometimes there is very important data that comes out the day of or during a Fed meeting. And we wonder whether, the Fed does get secret information. And Jay Powell did say that on those times, they do get, only the Fed chair gets the secret information the night before a data release. We said if there's a leakage, we know where it comes from because Jay's the only one getting it. It's a two-day meeting, and the FOMC only votes until about 2 hours before the data release at the end of the policy meeting. And then finally, he did kind of talk about, and it was interesting to hear them talk about the inner workings of how the meeting actually worked. And he does say that when they go around the room, Jay is the last person to speak about the economy. But when they start talking about monetary policy, he's the first person to speak. And then we wonder why we get unanimous decisions on what the Fed move is. So Jay says, this is what we're going to do. And everyone says, yes, sir. I'm sure there's discussion about it, but at the end of the day, it is unanimous.
I mean, especially on that advanced secret look at it. When you're talking about that, that just reminded me of the scene from Trading Places, which I just watched the other night as I was trying to fall asleep, and just seeing, the image of Jay Powell getting the secret suitcase from Clarence Beeks, akin to the secret or the advanced look on the crop report from Trading Places there. So give me a little reminder of that.
Now that is a Christmas movie.
That is. It's a great movie.
Yes. Also in Fed speak land, New York Fed President Williams was out there and said that the terminal rate for Fed funds of 5 to 5.25 was a reasonable number. Looking at the WIRP here today, as of right now, we're at 5.19, so still in that 5 to 5.25 range. That's actually elevated a little bit, up about 10 basis points or so from earlier in the week. So the market keeps on continuing to reprice the peak Fed funds rate a little bit higher here. And that Fed President Williams also said that wage growth is, quote, well above, end quote, levels consistent with inflation target. And then Governor Waller was also out there, and his quote that I thought was interesting said, quote, it might be a long fight with interest rates higher for longer than some are currently expecting, end quote. And I think that that's, I guess the for longer than some are currently expecting is a pretty big caveat because, some people, certainly the market's pricing in some Fed cuts. So there are a lot of people out there pricing in some pretty big Fed cuts. So longer than some are expecting is a pretty big, disclaimer on there. But I think that the highlight is it might be a long fight and rates might be higher for longer is kind of the takeaway from his speech. With that, Sam, let's move over to the topic of the week. And as you know, Tuesday is Valentine's Day, and it's also on front run ourselves a little bit here. Tuesday is also CPI release day. And we've been sitting on a little bit of the CPI data because of waiting for the CPI data point here. But on the CPI number data that comes out on Tuesday, it's going to have a couple more volatile factors here that maybe we need to be worried about or at least take a look at in terms of how we dissect the CPI data. And the first one is that on January 10th, the BLS released the Bureau of Labor Statistics released a report highlighting their new weight methodology that they will use for the next 12 months of CPI releases. So remember the data that's released here on Tuesday is for January. So it's the first one of 2023. Historically, prior to 2002, the CPI data weights were updated once a decade. And then, that seems like a very, very long lag, as we've talked about before in other data points. In 2002, they changed it to once every 2 years. What they do is they take 2 years of spending data and they take a year to analyze it. I guess it's not really a full year to analyze it because they're collecting data into that next year. So they take, call it 9 months to analyze it. And then they use those weights for the next 2 years. So under the old, and that's kind of confusing, but let's get some data points here because that helps kind of frame things a little bit better. So under the old methodology from 2002 to today, The CPI weights for 2022 and 2023 would have been collected throughout through the beginning of 2021 using 2019 and 2020 data. So then they would average out that 2019 and 2020 data and combine them together and say, okay, here's the weights of the CPI based on spending data that we're going to use for the next 2 years. The new methodology, and which is just being implemented now, is to only use 1 year of data. So that they took they collected the 2021 data throughout 2021 and beginning of 2022. They spent the rest of 2022 analyzing it, and now they're going to use those weights here for 2023. So it's a Sam, as you pointed out, the old data was, or the old way of doing it, we 2023 we'd be using data from 2019 and 2020, so a pretty big lag there. Now we're only using we're using 2021 data for 2023, so it's only like at the end of the year it'll be a 2 year lag. So it's a much better, much faster moving type data point. One thing to note here is that because you're using 2019 and 2020, you're really pulling out that that COVID year is being a bigger piece of things, and that comparing 2019 plus 2020 to 2021. Is not that big of a change. I'll get to that in a second. In that BLS paper that they released on January 10th, or the blog post, I guess it wasn't really a paper, they used gasoline as an example. And in 2019, gasoline as a percent of total spending was 3.37% in 2019, as I said, and it dropped to 2.57% in 2020. Now, if you remember 2020, everyone was staying at home, and you weren't really commuting to work. So it makes sense that, that would be a very large drop there from 3.4% to 2.6. But using that 2 year average of 2019 and plus 2020, that would bring the 2 year average weight from 3.4 to 3%. And that 3% number is what was reflected in 2022. I think that changing it to a much shorter time period, kind of skipping the use of that COVID year, I think is going to be a good change here, and kind of better react to as we talk about, Sam, the fast reaction here. Here we are doing a podcast live. People want things right away. They don't want to wait 3 years. Things change. So I think it's helpful to only use a 1 year lag on that, or we'll average 1.5 years lag between when that data was collected and when it's being used here. But I think that's a much better way to look at things. And we'll know more on Tuesday when the data comes out. But there's going to be some differences, and some of those differences between the January number and the December number are going to be due to these changing weights. But some economists that I've read, they don't expect a large divergence in the weights, just because 2021 didn't diverge very dramatically from an average of 2019 and 2020. So 2021, we're still kind of coming out of the COVID pandemic. It makes sense that we'd kind of be in that pre-pandemic and bottom of the pandemic type average. It was interesting that they were saying that typically these weight changes, when they happened every couple of years, they would tend to reduce inflation, because people will substitute their buying. If something comes to a higher price, they'll readily find better substitutes for those goods or services that are at higher prices. So that tends to reduce inflation, whereas a more frequent change, it'll be interesting to see, over the next few years, how that changes things.
Yeah, I'd imagine a lot of the difference, actually, when we're talking about those COVID years, would come not necessarily within the prices of goods, of certain items, versus themselves over the previous period, but it's rather, thinking about the flipping between services spending, a bigger weight towards services spending that we had pre-pandemic, and then into the pandemic, where it seemed like the weight shifted over to goods versus services. And now we're kind of coming back to that revenge of the services and the revenge of the revenge travel again. So a little bit of flip-flopping going on between the actual components from the goods versus the services side. But overall, I agree with you. It's just having this more periodic update to be reflective of recent spending patterns seems to be a good thing overall. But as we like to talk about on this show, is that for those who look at the data, this is probably a mental note on, and get a little bit of a grasp on. But I'm kind of in agreement with you. I don't think there's going to be that much that's going to come out of it, other than just a little asterisk, when we start looking at it, a couple months from now, or especially looking back at it over time, it just seems like it's going to be more of a little blip.
Yeah, and it'll be, I'm sure that either the bulls or the bears will pick up on on these weight changes and can craft their narrative as they want.
That's right. You can always find something to fit your narrative.
That's right. But also, as I mentioned, there was two data changes going on this morning. This is why we wanted to kind of lump these two together, these two talking or topics together, is that this morning the BLS updated their seasonality factors. And if you know, if you remember, the CPI number is, the monthly CPI number is seasonally adjusted. They went back and revised all their numbers from 2022. Most months were revised upward, or most months in the second half of the year were revised upward. So inflation was a little bit stronger in the second half of the year, and they revised their very large numbers at the beginning of the year slightly down. For an instance, the December number, which was deflationary when December headline CPI went was at negative 0.1%, it was actually revised up to a positive 0.1%. And again, as I said, it doesn't affect the, it affects the monthly numbers, but because the year-over-year numbers are non-seasonally adjusted, because you have a one-year data point, you can seasonally adjust both, but you use the same adjustment. They just cancel each other out, so you don't look at the seasonally adjusted year-over-year numbers, but it does affect those monthly numbers. And really, it affects kind of the short-term trends. So when people were looking at the fourth quarter CPI numbers and kind of annualizing those numbers and saying, hey, fourth quarter annualized was 1.6%. That's below two, we should be good. The Fed should be willing to kind of let off the brake, I guess, a little bit, and let things speed up a little bit because inflation is coming down quickly. Well, that with the revisions, it got to 2%. So let me back up. Fourth quarter annualized was 1.6. I got confused. Third quarter was 2.0. So you had progress and went from 2 to 1.6. So the numbers were coming down and they were below kind of where the Fed was looking at it. After the revisions, fourth quarter was up to 3.25%. Fourth quarter is up 3.25% from 2.4 in the third quarter. So a pretty big revision there in the fourth quarter from 1.6 to 3.25. Again, you're annualizing the third quarter number. So it kind of expands that difference. So you're not really looking at a 3.25 for a year-over-year number, but it just shows you that trend is not in place anymore. And that the Fed, if the Fed was looking at those numbers, if Powell had, this is one of the ones where Powell had the early look on these revisions, he would say, look at it and say that the inflation was actually higher than they'd be comfortable with, and maybe they need to keep rates at higher for longer. I guess at the margin, because the first half of the year numbers actually were revised lower, it's going to, when we kind of get those numbers, we're going to have those numbers that are relatively smaller rolling off for the year-over-year numbers that we're going to get this year in 2023 in the first half of the year. So that's going to make your year-over-year CPIs, marginally higher. And then if you look at the core CPI, this is all on headline. The core CPI for the fourth quarter was 3.1% annualized. That's what it was before the revision, and now it revised up to 4.3%. So looking at that, the Fed's got a long ways to go. That was a lot of numbers and a lot of kind of back and forth. So check out our Twitter feed. I'm sure we'll have some charts there some bar charts that kind of putting those numbers into bars that'll make it a little bit easier for people to understand.
Yeah, the visual aids are always helpful. So thanks, Jason Ferrant, on the Twitter help there when it comes to it. And with that, Jeff, thanks for that rundown on the change in the methodology. And we won't have that long to wait to see the impact on that. So as far as things to keep an eye on for next week on Tuesday, as we talked about, February 14th, happy Valentine's Days to people that care about that day. But outside of that, I'm sure everyone else cares about CPI Day. So that's the day that we get the CPI released for the month of January. The estimates are for headline CPI on a month-over-month basis to be a positive 0.5%. That's up from a negative 0.1% the month prior. On the headline basis, we're looking at a 6.2% positive estimate on the year-over-year, down from 6.5% the period before. On the core basis for year-over-year, it's expected to be positive 5.5%. Down slightly from the 5.7% in the month of December. Also that week on Wednesday, February 15th, we get the retail sales. Retail sales on the Advanced look for month over month is expected to be a positive 1.8%. So a big improvement from last period, which was negative 1.1%. When we strip out autos and gas, that's expected to be a positive 9%. And then when we look at the retail sales control group, that's expected to be 0.8%. If our memory serves, the control group there is what is actually important when it, because that is the component that goes into the consumer side of the calculation in the GDP. And from there, again, if memory serves, that's the X autos, X gas, but then you also take out some of the other volatile components like the construction or building materials there. And I want to say food services as well. So either way, across the board, looks like a clean sweep for the expectations, at least, to be a positive print for those month over month numbers there. And then, of course, on Thursday, we have the jobless claims data with initial jobless claims for the week ending February 11th, expected to be at 200,000 initial claims. And on continuing claims for the week ending February 4th, that's expected to be a little bit higher than the previous period at 1.7 million claims for that week as of today, February 10th, for those expectations. And then on Thursday, we get the kind of the leading indicator for the consumer price basket, and this is the producer price indices, with the PPI final demand on a month-over-month basis expected to be positive this month at 0.4% versus a negative 0.5% the month previous, so that would be December. And then on the year-over-year basis, the final demand is expected to be a positive 5.4%, decelerating slightly from 6.2% the period previous. And on core, it's expected to be a positive 4.9%, again, decelerating from the previous period of 5.5%. And then to wrap it all up, we have the leading index that comes out, and that's for those who are more familiar with the acronym, it's LEI, the Leading Economic Indicators Index. On a month-over-month basis, expected to decelerate to negative 0.3%, down from negative 0.8%. And as listeners know, we do view this as one of those indicators for recession. So that on a year-over-year basis has been hanging in negative territory for some time. So we'll see if there's any change that comes in place for the January number of the leading economic indicators that's released next Friday.
Yeah, and given that we are at six, well, we were looking at this LEI chart earlier in the week. And if you reach a six, negative six in LEI, usually that's you're in the midst or at the very, very beginning of a recession. So according to this index, we were in a recession or we've already been in a recession. So maybe this time is different. And certainly the treasury market or the yield curve is a big component of the leading index. And you know, that's been inverted, and we've been saying, as Sam, as you know, we've been saying the curve's been inverted since the beginning of January, and that we are really looking at it as a since the beginning of July, and that because we've been negative for so long that it is kind of portends a recession. But as we talked about a few weeks ago, is it different this time? And also, yeah. You know, we'll break out next week. I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about inflation. As Mark Kimbrough put in here, it's inflation week next week with the CPI and the PPI. But, we'll keep an eye on that super core inflation, services ex housing that Chair Powell seems to be most concerned about these days.
Yeah. And on top of that, I guess next week we'll know the winner of the Super Bowl. So I know you gave your prediction there on the most recent episode of the Sherman Show podcast here, but for listeners of M3 who might not be cross listeners, what's your prediction for next week?
Well, it was 3 weeks ago, where it was beginning or after the first round of the wild card round of the playoffs, I predicted the Chiefs would win. And I'll stick with that prediction. And it's funny to hear the, all the bitter Niner fans complaining about the Eagles this morning.
Yeah. Although, doesn't seem like Sherman was much of a bitter Niner fan there. He's more just accepting because he didn't complain at all.
I wasn't using names, and then you had to go throw me under the bus.
You know, I got to do it.
All right. Well, I guess that wraps it up for this week, Sam, before you get me even in more in trouble. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in live and for listening to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening to us out there, be it on the live on the Twitter Spaces or on the traditional channel of the M3 podcast. But we are Monday Morning Minutes. Don't forget to subscribe if you're new to us, especially if you're on Twitter Spaces. You can subscribe to us on the podcast platform for you. In case you miss an episode there, you can always pick it up. We're available on all your favorite platforms. If you can't find us, you can hit us up on the email at minutes@doubleline.com or, of course, on the Twitter at @DLineMinutes. Please send us any questions or comments. If you have a topic of the week that you'd like us to do an in-depth dive on, feel free to submit it, and we will use it as our topic of the week.
Yeah, and you should be able to check our website, doubleline.com, for the other episodes and search for a topic. And if you don't find it, or even if you do find it, you want us to dive in a little bit deeper, just hit us up there. Don't forget to go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/doubleline capital. You can watch Jeff Sherman was on TV at an ETF conference this week. So you can see what he was talking about in the ETF world. And then also don't forget the Jeff and Sam, you guys do that other podcast, The Sherman Show. You can make sure to follow them on Twitter at Sherman Show Pod. Hope everyone has a great week.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and good luck out there.
The audio presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media in any form without express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this podcast and any liability therefor, including in respect of direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is expressly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice in this podcast. The receipt of this podcast by any listener is not to be taken as constituting the giving of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual to that listener, nor to constitute such person a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but does not imply low risk.
Copyright 2021 DoubleLine Capital.